It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast. Second attempt here because I am very much lacking in sleep and very rusty. My name is Joey. That's Len. Should we fake the pleasantries for the second attempt here?
I still am legitimately curious. How are things going with you? For people who are unaware, you are a first-time father, so you're going through the whole process of what it's like to deal with a newborn. I mistakenly said last show, you gave birth, and I corrected myself. No, it's not you that gave birth. It's your wife that gave birth. Although we are living in an age where potentially you may, more than some people have given birth. But how's everything going with you, Joey?
I'm on fumes, buddy. As I just described there, I have barely slept. I think that's the first time. Is that the first time we've ever had to restart an AOE recording? Probably not, but this first time because I couldn't figure out which story you were talking about because my headlines are jumbled up.
Well, you know what, Joey, I just, before we go any further, I still want to make a big thank you to both Praveen and Mark. Praveen did double duty, did a couple of shows, and he filled in admirably. And Mark, what can we say about him? He filled in wonderfully as well. And yeah, Mark, why are you only doing one show, not two? You're a slacker. You got to pick up the pace and be more like Praveen and less like Joey, I guess. So, no, just kidding.
I did see my wife and I watched a bit of the CBP episode Mark co-hosted, and we both got a kick out of his tag, Easy DNS Corporate.
He was dynamite on that show. Like, he was dynamite.
I know, he's good, man.
He's so much fun to talk to, and it's just a big thank you to him for filling in that as well. And so, yeah, without their help, there's no way I could have done this myself. It would have been a horrendous crash wreck. And with them, at least it was a moderate crash wreck. And it wasn't because of them. It was simply because of me. But yeah, thank you to them. And pass it over back to you, Joey.
Okay, let's get after it here for real. Last week's quote, you must learn to be disliked or you'll find yourself stuck in a prison of other people's desires. That's from Cody Sanchez. No winner there. This week's quote, to the mind that is still the whole universe surrenders. Like I said in the first take, I really like that quote. If you know who it was by, put it in the comments. No searching. You guys know the drill. And you get your next round of renewals on Easy DNS. So Len, five stories. Now that I know what order we're going to go in here, I can continue my woefully underprepared commentary with you leading the way. Where do you want to start?
iVerify. Let's talk about this company with the mobile security company that has a name that's kind of piggybacking off Apple's success by putting an I in front of it. That's what a lot of companies do. Good for them, but whatever. Anyways, iVerify, they've been doing some digging. As I mentioned, they're the mobile security company. And the digging they have done discovered that the Pegasus spyware, this is developed by the NSO group. We talked about this at length in numerous shows on the Access of Easy because this is something that happens every so often and it gets reported. Well, Pegasus spyware has been targeting high-profile individuals that are beyond the traditional targets, such as journalists and activists that typically are the target for this kind of stuff. So this new attack, new victims include business leaders and government officials. And the iVerify report basically highlights how mobile spyware, how it works and how sophisticated it has become over the years. And the need that we have to employ better security measures to protect ourselves. And it's not just simply going out there and updating your phone or your computer to make sure you have the latest and greatest software, but the user themselves has to be vigilant in terms of not clicking on stuff that they shouldn't. So if they get an email with an attachment they're not familiar with, or there's an unrecognized source for a website, just simply don't go to it. Be very careful. But even then, even if you do have all the updates and you're very diligent, you can still be subjected to one of these attacks because there's the zero-day attacks that could get after your phone or your computer, and that's why the updates hopefully fix that, but that's a zero-day, so you know it's always the trying to catch a horse that's left the barn. So in this case, it's not the first time we heard about Pegasus that's been infecting these high-profile individuals. You know, they've been going after politicians, social media folks, government employees, authors, just about anybody that says crap about powerful organizations over the years. And so in this case, you know, they're going out and going after these businesses, business leaders as well. And, you know, we heard recently about Jeff Bezos's phone also getting attacked. Just everybody has to be very careful and make sure whatever you put on your phone, your handheld devices, is not going to indict you in the future, or it's not going to get your Bitcoin stolen or stuff along those lines. Be very careful. Try to secure your stuff better. That's really the only thing you can do. That's the only takeaway here.
So a couple things. I'll start with, I have some commentary on the security of the hardware at the kernel level on Apple devices. Thanks to my experience in jailbreaking. You may remember, Len, early in the iPhone life cycle, back in 2010, 2011, 2012, starting with the iPod Touch, there were ways to go through a process for your device that was lovingly referred to as jailbreaking. And actually, that term really caught on probably before that. It's been used many other times in many other bits of software and hardware over the years, including the Nintendo Switch and some other stuff. The jailbreak was always interesting, especially in the early days, because this device that was supposed to be like incredibly secure was actually basically break-inable by just having it plugged into your computer and visiting a website. I think the website was jailbreak.me. And so you plug in your iPod and go to this website, click the button on the page, and ta-da, Bob's your uncle. You have a now jailbroken, aka device that was device had a vulnerability taken advantage of, right? So Apple's had this problem for a long time. This has become more and more difficult over the years, to the point where now I think on iOS 18, I think mine is like 18.2 or 18.1 now, it's basically impossible. There's an entire portion of the jailbreak community now dedicated more to going backwards in the software on your phone than there is to trying to jailbreak the most recent set of software, because it's just proven so difficult to do. So they're getting better. But that said, if you especially if you expose your phone, the physical device, to an illicit actor, I can't imagine it's that hard to get in. So a couple quotes from the article I think are important. One is, so since Apple tightly controls the software on iPhones and iPads to make it difficult for apps like iVerify to examine the security of other installed apps or the kernel of the underlying software, the security firm analyzes other telemetry data within those privacy constraints, such as on-device diagnostic logs, to help determine if the device might be compromised. Apple is so secure, takes security so seriously, that they don't actually let you scan the device to see whether or not the device is secure. Is that interesting to you? Do you know of any other company doing something like that under what is presumably the guise of, we have to make sure that these things are as tightly wound as possible? Because you would almost want to be able to do that. And I'm sure that there's, normie level software that you could run on a phone that would tell you if your device is compromised, right? The same way that like you can have an antivirus program on your computer. You don't know what's going on with the antivirus scan, but it sends you a nice red pop-up or whatever and says, hey, you have something here, it needs your attention. Here's the options. The fact that Apple doesn't do that as time goes on is becoming more troubling to me as an iPhone user and as someone who knows that, entire swaths of government and other important agencies around the world use these devices as their primary, sort of their daily drivers, both on the desktop side and on the mobile side. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I wish there was a way that you could actually figure out and do scans yourself. It's Apple's been notorious for providing a closed system, and they have all the tools and they keep the tools to themselves and don't share it with the end user. And that works for a lot of people. They like that. They like the ease of use. They like the ability to do stuff. And it's almost like when you go from one phone to the next, it's just the same type of experience. So, yeah. And that's what people like. It may not be best for them. It just seems to work as a business model. So kudos to Apple. But with respect to Pegasus, this is something that it could affect, infect the phone, even with or without any intervention from the user. It could be a zero-click attack that could be done. Like, there's a lot of different ways to do it. So, and I'm not just trying to pick on Apple as being the one that's targeted here, but it's just, it's a device out there. It's popular, and they created software to attack it. And the only way to continually make sure that you're clean is, like, as I mentioned, don't click on stuff.
Yeah.
Be careful with what you open and continually.
Even like there's not really much of a reason even now to connect your phone to a computer. You know?
Yeah, like, 100%. Like
there's not really much need. Let the phone do the work for you. Do your updates, OTA, et cetera, et cetera. I think that's probably good advice now. If it wasn't, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, I think now it probably is.
And I don't think Jeff Bezos was hooking up his phone to, they were doing this over the air, these type of attacks.
Yeah, maybe.
It's just, everything's getting way more sophisticated.
For sure. And there's like charging cables that plant this stuff too. Like I know everyone by now has seen this guy on Instagram who talks about how, you know, every cable you plug into should be one that you unpackaged yourself from a reliable vendor, or you run the risk of having something planted on your phone. It's that easy and that discreet that it's almost unavoidable if the right person gets access to your device.
If I was a prominent individual that had means that, like Jeff Bezos type means,
yeah,
I would seriously consider. You would
not have a Gorgon looking Latin girlfriend. Is that what you're
going
to say?
I'm not going down that path.
You would not have a Latin girlfriend who is Bogdanov maxing. What you were going to say?
I was going to say I would get a new phone almost every week, just to like, right? Just to ensure that if you're
moving target, right? Yeah.
I would even do it more frequently. And I know it would be a pain in the rear end, especially because I run Graphene OS. It's, you know, everything I do, I have to load up.
And you just pay somebody to do it. You can pay some other person to do it. Yeah.
Well, I don't trust. I verify.
So what do we do? I don't know. It's all kinds of questions, right?
New phone every week or quicker. Just and then, you know what? Then put that phone on the open market, sell it for crap load of money and buy Bitcoin with it. Way you go. Let's talk about this next one. This Stephen Jurvetson. I may have butchered his name. It could be Jurvetson. It could be Stefan. I don't know. I'm going to call him Stephen Jurvetson. This guy is talking about Moore's Law. And Moore's Law, like, this is the observation made by Intel's co-founder back in 1965, Gordon Moore. And it stated that the number of transistors in dense integrated circuits, they double approximately every 2 years. And while at the same time, the cost of transistors decrease. So if you want to just break that down in simpler terms, it just makes computers and other electronic devices become faster and cheaper over time. And you can graph this out. And this guy pretty much did. And this guy, he's the founder, Stephen Jurvetson. He's the founder of the Future Ventures and investor in transformative companies like Tesla, SpaceX, Skype. And this guy, he's been around, done a lot of things. Made a probably a crap load of money just because he's the companies he's been involved with. So he's emphasizing the significance of Moore's Law and how it's going to be dealing and implying implications for future technology. And he basically mapped out the Moore's Law, and with remarkable accuracy, it's been almost bang on for the past 50 years. And the trend is projected to be able to continue for at least another 20 years. And this is significant because the relevance of this, it's going to play potentially a crucial role in the development of AI moving forward and other emerging technologies, especially, you know, AI, it's very powerful, needs more powerful hardware and software to keep up to advance the field of AI. But that's not the only sector here that could take advantage of it, like agricultural, automobiles, aerospace, energy and chemicals. I mean, there's a lot of different sectors that could really take advantage of more powerful hardware, and having this mapped out and figuring things out where things are going to be next few years could certainly help them at least play out how things are going to work. And these industries, like I said, they're going to benefit tremendously if the Moore's Law continues the way it is for the next 20 years or so. I find this stuff interesting. NVIDIA came out of nowhere, it seemed, in the past few years, and I'm sure they were looking at this as one of their guiding light. I'm wondering, 20 years, I thought, at least from what I was reading, that we were coming up to a wall with respect to Moore's Law, but I guess maybe not. Maybe we have another 20 years to go with this.
It's the materials, really, I think, that Moore's Law is going to run up against. But, you know, what do I know? The interesting thing here, I thought, is that this is – okay, so I'm gonna read one paragraph out of here, the one that I think Zero Hedge tries to highlight too. I would go further – this is from Jurvetson. I would go further and assert that this is the most important graph ever conceived. He's talking about this 100-point graph that he's got in this Twitter post. A large and growing set of industries depends on continued exponential cost declines in computational power and storage density. Both very important. Storage also very important. Moore's Law drives electronics, communications, and computers, and has become a primary driver in drug discovery, biotech and bioinformatics, medical imaging and diagnostics. As Moore's Law crosses critical thresholds, a formerly lab science of trial and error of trial and error experimentation becomes a simulation science, and the pace of progress accelerates dramatically, creating opportunities for new entrants in new industries. Consider the autonomous software stack for Tesla and SpaceX and the impact that is having on the automotive and aerospace sector. So his case, I know, is that Moore's Law is not dying because it's becoming too difficult. It's actually accelerating because you're going to get away from the constraints of materials soon. And it's the realm of simulation and certainty in a lot of ways. That's a wild story. And it's something that I don't consider too often. The last sentence from the tweet is pretty good too. Let me see, just go down to it here. We live in interesting times at the cusp of the frontiers of the unknown and breathtaking advances, but it should always feel that way, engendering a perpetual sense of future shock. Ain't that the truth, Steve? We're in a crazy time here. And you and me, I think, you know, we kind of understand this, maybe not instinctually or instinctively, because it's difficult for humans to do exponentials in their mind. But there's some level of understanding, I think, for us, even as guys who do the Bitcoin dance, because, you know, I understand that the difference between where Bitcoin is today and Bitcoin being at every coffee shop is not actually, you know, a huge gap, even though it may seem like it. The difference between Bitcoin at 100K and a million is not actually a huge gap, even though it may seem like it, because as in every other silo, and as Steven mentions in his post, we are accelerating, Len, at a level that we have never experienced before. To you know, apogees and peaks that we have no tools to imagine, and it's crazy that we get to live in this time. And I'm excited about it. It can be a little scary from time to time, sure. But overall, I'd say it's very exciting.
Yeah, and I think the big thing that they have to deal with, even with changing materials, right, I always thought it was heat, because you are essentially trying to make things as small as possible to have the smallest distance between A and B. And that's how you increase speed. Now, when you do that, obviously having stuff closer together, it's going to get much hotter. So yeah. Then how to dissipate the heat, how to deal with that heat management, that's a big thing. I don't know. And they always talk about global warming. Maybe this is going to continually impact that. What the heck do I know? It's cold today outside here, and I don't want to talk about global warming. I want to talk about this China stuff. This Salt Tycoon. What a name, eh? Salt Tycoon. We got to give this a score. And if you guys, it's so close to a video game, I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5.
I think this is another candidate
Typhoon, sorry.
Yeah, I think this was, it's almost like a Reddit username generated.
Typhoon?
Yeah, when you go on Reddit, if you try and make a username, it gives you the option to just have the computer generate based on two dictionary words. So I give this a 2 out of 5.
I'm trying to think of, I have a Reddit account, and I can't even remember what is the name.
Oh,
is it a randomly generated name?
You should never tell anyone your Reddit account. That's rule number one of having a Reddit account.
I don't even know what it is. I can't even tell you if I wanted to.
Yeah, find out. Keep it to yourself so that you can pass a lie detector test when you're called in front of the Minority Report.
You'd be surprised of how little is on there. Like, to be honest, the only thing I do is I sub to a bunch of subreddits.
Yeah, same. And I'm a lurker big time. Yeah, I'm a lurker.
Yeah.
I post on some subreddits you'd never guess, but are not like, you know. It's not like they're damaging to my reputation. It's just like niche interests that I have that people about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the Salt Tycoon thing, it's a hacking campaign, and some are saying this is attributed to a Chinese state sponsored hackers. And this is pretty significant because it's been targeting telecom providers worldwide and stuff like companies, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. They've been all under attack from this thing, and they've all had their information stolen, the metadata, including information on a vast number of U.S. citizens, including senior government officials and political figures. And let's be honest, everybody has a cell phone, and even if you are one of these quote-unquote important people, you too have a cell phone, and you're relying on the same backbone just about everybody else does. But
yes, sir.
Anyways, the campaign doesn't just deal with U.S. It extends beyond the borders. And Europe, Indo-Pacific region, and also other parts of the world has been compromised. And yeah, it's U.S. officials, they've been strongly implicating that this is the Chinese government that's behind this Salt Typhoon campaign. And it just goes to show you that this threat, and we talked about it, it kind of taps into the first story with the Pegasus. Everybody needs to use a cell phone, and that's a honeypot for information, because they have most likely your name, your address, also your calling habits, your data habits, and they can figure stuff out on what you're doing, how you're doing it, when you're doing it. And if you have this type of information, if somebody's sending something that isn't encrypted, that they don't want somebody else to have, and they get their hands on it, they can certainly use that as a means of trying to extort them in the future. So it just goes to show you, you have to use stuff like Signal or other things that provide you the type of encryption that other sort of other things don't. So yeah, just be very careful with using anything moving forward, because you know, if you use something like WhatsApp, or gosh, I can't think of anything else off the top of my head, but either way, stuff that may appear to be end-to-end encrypted, but in reality it's not, they could easily be attacked one way or another. Don't use that stuff. Use stuff like Keet, Sessions, Signal. There's a bunch of others. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head, but definitely use stuff like that. And that's the real way to deal with things. But also try not to send anything that's going to incriminate you over the phone.
These guys are full of SHIT. We're not allowed to swear on this podcast. Key paragraph here. Yeah, key paragraph here. The FBI and other federal law enforcement agencies have a complicated relationship with encryption technology, historically advocating against full end-to-end encryption that does not allow law enforcement access to digital material, even with warrants. But the FBI has also supported some forms of encryption that do allow law enforcement to access in certain circumstances. And then I look at that article, or I look at that paragraph, and then I look at this other one. Signal and WhatsApp automatically. Privacy advocates have long advocated for using end-to-end encrypted apps. Signal and WhatsApp, along with Google Messages and iMessage. Like, why are those things in the article together? Like, is the FBI trying to cow herd me, you know, like cattle herd me into a little honeypot where they can see all my messages and see what I'm talking about with all my friends, right? And then call me an extremist in 5 years. Like, this is the thing I think is concerning. They give you a list of apps that, oh no, these ones are end-to-end encrypted, but don't use any of these. They're end-to-end, like, these ones are the ones we can't get into, and they list them all. Doesn't that seem a bit weird to you? Is that strange?
Use the SMS to send stuff out. That's the most secure. And you know you're going to get it, but everybody else will get it as well.
Yeah, write notes to each other. I don't know. These stories are weird, man. Like, there's clearly an effort in most first world democracies to make inroads by the government on your private discussions, whether it's with something like Amazon's Alexa, tapping your phone, arresting the Telegram CEO, you name it. And so, yeah, I do view lists of apps that are allegedly end-to-end encrypted and can't be accessed, provided in the same article where the FBI warns that they can't get these, you know, messages. I view it with a skeptical eye, let's say. And I think it would be wise if you did too, listener and viewer.
I wonder if that guy from United Healthcare was sending stuff.
Oh my God. I can't believe that's not in this newsletter. I know it's not quite digital security, but geez, like, that guy with the gun must've known something about that guy's schedule.
So it was posted on X, and saying that would have been, that is actually a GTA mission where you have to go out and assassinate the head of a company so you could drive down the share price of that company.
Yeah, you blow a guy up while he's giving a live interview or live address to a shareholder or something like that. Yeah.
And you have the option, if you wanted to, you could even use a bicycle to escape, which this guy did. So you could almost like, art
imitating art, a real life GTA 5 mission before we got GTA 6. So add that to things that those guys couldn't beat to the finish line.
Blue Sky. Let's talk about another thing that's in trouble. And I'll be perfectly honest here. I had my head buried so far up my rear end. I had no idea what Blue Sky was until maybe a week or two ago.
Really?
I just never had a clue what it is.
It's normie Twitter, basically.
It really is. I mean, this is okay. Let's go. If anybody's like me that just was living under a rock. So this is Blue Sky, a decentralized social media platform that aims to provide a more open and user-controlled online experience. And this is built on the AT protocol. And it's an open source protocol that enables different social media apps to interoperate, promoting a more diverse and interconnected social media landscape. This began back as an internal project in Twitter 5 years ago, 2019, when it first started. This Jack Dorsey, the then CEO, is the guy that started it. And the goal was to explore a decentralized social media platform. And it became an independent company just a few years ago in 2021, I believe. And it really separated ties from Twitter after Elon Musk purchased Twitter and renamed it X.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Blue Sky became a invite-only service back last year, and then it became open to the whole public earlier this year.
Is it open now? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, apparently it's open registration now as of earlier this year. And it's gained some traction, I guess, trying to attract users for that seeking an alternative to X or / Twitter. And yeah, so they say it's open or decentralized in a way, but you know what? I don't know. Blue Sky isn't, you know, the servers aren't controlled by one particular company. The users can pick and choose whatever servers they want to attach to or connect to. Kind of sounds in a way like Noster, but I don't know. Either way, it's not what's called a VLOP, VLOP, a very large online platform, because it's still at the very beginning stages. They're still trying to attract people like bloggers, journalists, artists, stuff like that, that just don't like what's going on in the world or the realm of X. And in Blue Sky, you can get all the blue hair you want. So it's wonderful stuff for the people in that group. So like I said, I never heard of it until last week or 2 weeks ago, and I probably won't hear of it again for a very long time. What's so special about this? Nothing really, in my opinion. It seems like it's just attracting one group of individuals, and if that's your forte, if you like that kind of stuff, all the more power to you. Enjoy going there, but whatever. I'm going to continually use Noster as my primary source of online communication.
It's interesting that these guys are talking about this because the platform is so small. It has only about 2 million daily active users. You know how many daily active users Twitter has?
700 million, sorry.
It's about 250 million daily active users.
Oh, I'm way over.
Oof. So it's still pretty high, but not quite where you were. And the thing I think that's important here to note is that this is once again being led by illegitimate continental Leviathan, the European Union, which will be dead by the time 2030 rolls around. So we don't have to worry about these morons for too much longer. But it's interesting, these guys keep coming up with all this dumb shit. You know, sorry, Mark, I'm swearing. I tried to mask it once, but like, what is a VLOP? We talked about this on the show before, I'm pretty sure. This like acronym they came up with, basically anything with over 45 million users, they want to censor it. They need to have their hands in the pie. This is great. You're supposed to have a page according to the DSA, the Digital Services Act, again, the block of Europe censorship law, that says you have to tell it how many users are based in the European Union. Blue Sky has no such page for now. Blue Sky is never going to have that page. The European Union has so many bigger things to worry about, like committing economic seppuku over energy policy and all of its liberal governments toppling one at a time in favor of more pragmatic populist governments. It should not be wasting time on this, but it does, because, you know, as former intelligence guy Mike Benz has noted in a few podcast appearances recently, it's not actually tanks that modern militaries care about, it's tweets. And, you know, you're starting to see this more and more. It is impossible to deny that governments are letting their own affairs rot from the inside out and spending time on making sure that they know who is behind the screen name tweeting things about immigration on whatever platform, tweeting things about financial security on whatever platform, tweeting things about Keir Starmer on whatever platform. Like, there's no doubt about this at this point. And anyone who pretends or wants to pretend that these platforms, anything that's not X, basically, if you want to pretend that any of these platforms are unmoderated, unsupervised, decentralized, whatever, they're not. Elon, you need a guy like Elon telling people in no uncertain terms to FO when they ask him about censorship and bullying and anti-Semitism, these sort of drummed up accusations from the usual suspects with no bearing in reality, in an attempt to delegitimize a conversation that's going on and heading in a direction that they don't like. Good riddance when the EU disappears finally. But until we have to, until we get to celebrate that, we have to deal with stuff like this. Get used to it. Blue Sky's a tiny drop in the bucket, and still, you know, they're being targeted by these people. Just get a real job, all these censors in the European Union. You cannot burn to the ground soon enough.
What's the number you quoted for being a VLOP? Was it 45 million?
45 million, yeah.
So does that number increase as there's more migrants coming into Europe from Africa and other?
What we need to do is ship in all of sub-Saharan Africa and give them not only free healthcare at the European border, but also a phone with a Blue Sky account. That's the trick. Well,
I just want to know, I mean, is this adjusted for inflation the same way that our salaries should be as more people end up within the borders of European Union?
Don't get me started. You have no idea how fast I'm going to get us fired once we start going back to CBP. I am like, my perspective has changed so much in the last month that I am just so sick of pretending I'm wrong when I know I am so right. I am so right.
I'm very good at towing the line these days, and I'll continue to do that. Let's talk about Matrix. And on December 3rd, this is very recent stuff, Europol, in collaboration with French and Dutch authorities, they were successful at dismantling the encrypted messaging service Matrix, M-A-T-R-I-X. And it's
zero out of five there. It's stolen.
Matrix? Yeah. Okay, I was thinking about 1.5. But there's also another way, Mactrix, M-A-C-T-R-I-X. It's another way of calling it, or TotalSec. X Quantum and Q Safe. There's a bunch of names. I mean, combined they might get 3.5 out of 5, but individually they're all garbage. So these things have been used by criminal networks worldwide to facilitate a range of illegal activities like drug trafficking, dealing of arms, money laundering, all this stuff that they love to go after. And encrypted communications, obviously, is stuff that is end-to-end encrypted information. And they're saying that criminals were using this, and well, they ended up cracking into this and took, you know, it's now a significant blow to the criminal underworld over there because they were able now to get involved and start going after some of this. 2.3 million messages in total they were able to get into. And it just goes to show you, like, Matrix, this probably was released by a government to begin with, or at least, yeah, you know,
worked on by a government or contributed. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
I don't hear anything going on with Signal saying, yeah, we cracked it, because you know what? That crap is open source, and you could look at the code. You could look at to see if there's any sort of holes in it. And to date, there's been none. Just like Bitcoin, there are none. So, like, you know, try to use, if you're going to use end-to-end encrypted stuff, try to use the stuff that's tried, tested, and true, and the stuff that you could audit yourself. You may not be a programmer, but at least somebody within your circles or the greater circle of the community of the program you're using are probably programmers and going to be looking at it. And if they're using it, you know, you could probably use it too, I think.
Yeah. Only 8,000 users, I guess, were using this thing. So not super widely adopted, but, you know, all the same, anyone promising you security, chances are, Len, you know, what are the odds that that security is actually as foolproof and as fail-safe as is advertised? Almost zero at this point, right?
Do you think this was a government-issued cell phone that was included Matrix in it? Here
it's
you
hard
go,
to
sir.
Say. Yeah, it's hard to say.
Use this very, very secure program called Matrix.
I don't know. And like some of the things, like this, the other thing too is this cost, $1,300 to $1,600, is actually not that much. Like if you go look at, this is a little off the beaten path here, but if I go look at the Black Phone, the Silent Circle Black Phone from Encrypted OS, I think is quite a bit more expensive and has privacy baked into the hardware and the software. And the phone works well with other phones of this nature. I think it's like $4,000 or something. Like it's a lot. It's a lot more than this cost, or 4,000 euros, whatever. Here, let's see. The Black Phone 2 on this website from Encrypted OS costs
that's like 4% of a Bitcoin.
Just so the know. Black Phone 2 is the older one, it's 560 euros. So you're getting, you know, whatever there with that service. The Black Phone Privy is 2,000 euros. So you get, you know, an actual private device that's really limited in use and, you know, requires a little bit of work on your end for 2000 euros. The odds that you're getting, you know, unlimited, undefeated privacy for 1300 euros is basically zero. This is just an example of 8,000 people who didn't do a Google search. Is it not?
Or they're just
basically cheap. like what are we talking about here? You just like pick the first link.
It was just too cheap. They got the blue phone that they saw on Amazon. It costs $150, and it's got everything I need.
One megabit camera, cool camera.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff. I don't know.
They got the Black Friday privacy deal. $1,300, pretty good. You love.
China's getting all the information.
Oh my god,
Joy, good for you. You toughed it out with a restart at that.
Yeah,
and we're now at the end. So that's like good.
I can hear my wife walking around upstairs, probably rocking my daughter to sleep or trying to. So,
well, yeah. It will get easier from here, Joy, because
that's what they say.
It does. If you can survive the first month, you can survive the rest. It just, like I said, you just gotta pace yourself for the next 30 years.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, exactly. Thanks for listening, everyone. Access of Easy. We'll see you next week. Latest and greatest in data breach and overreach. And until then, take care of yourselves. Take care.